They might come for me next.
Chapter 16. Chloe and Tina were waiting in the spa when I arrived. Tina was leaning over the counter, reading something on the laptop Eva had left open behind the desk, and Chloe was ensconced deep in a luxuriously upholstered vintage leather chair, playing on her phone. I was surprised to see that without her makeup on, she looked completely different. The huge, smoky eyes and jutting cheekbones of last night somehow faded and flat by the light of day. She caught me looking at her in the mirror and grinned.
Wondering about the slap? Apparently I'm down for a facial, so I took it off. I told you, I'm quite the makeup artist.
Oh, I didn't... I trailed off, feeling myself blush.
Contouring, Chloe said.
She swung the chair around to face me and winked.
Honestly, it will change your life. I could turn you into anyone from Kim Kardashian to Natalie Portman with what I've got in my cabin.
I was just about to make a joking reply when I caught a movement out of the corner of my eye and saw with a shock that one of the full-length mirrors behind the desk was moving, swinging inwards. Another door. Seriously, how many concealed entrances did this boat have? Tina's head jerked up from the laptop as Eva came through the gap, smiling politely.
"Can I help you, Miss West?" she asked.
"We keep our client lists and confidential information on that computer, so I'm afraid we don't allow guests to use it. If you wish to use a computer, Camilla Lidman will be delighted to arrange one for your cabin."
Tina straightened awkwardly and turned the laptop to face the desk again.
"Sorry, darling."
She had the grace to look slightly shamefaced.
I was just looking for the list of treatments.
Since there was a full list in the press pack, it was a slightly lame excuse.
"I would be delighted to give you a printout," Eva said.
There was no hint of coolness in her tone, but she looked at Tina rather appraisingly.
"We have the usual types of massage and therapies, facials, pedicures, and so on. The manicures and hair treatments take place in this room."
She indicated the chair that Chloe was perching on. I was just wondering where the other treatments took place, as there was only one chair in the spa and no more room on the upper deck as far as I could make out. The hot tub and the sauna took up most of the rest of the space. When the deck door swung open, and somewhat to my surprise, Anne Bulmer came in. She looked a little better than last night, her skin less sallow, her face somehow slightly less drawn, but her dark eyes were circled with deep shadows as though she hadn't slept.
"I'm sorry," she said, breathlessly, trying to smile. "It takes me so long on the stairs at the moment."
"Here." Chloe stood up hastily and tried to edge out of the way into an unoccupied corner of the room.
"Have my seat."
"There's no need," Anne said.
Chloe began to insist, but Eva cut across their polite exchange with a smile.
"We're heading to the treatment rooms now, in any case, ladies. Lady Bulmer, if you would like to take a seat here. Miss West, Miss Blacklock, and Miss Jensen, shall we make our way down?"
"Down?" Before I could wonder what that meant, she opened the mirrored door behind the desk. A touch at the frame sent it swinging inwards, and we began to descend a set of narrow, dark stairs, one after the other. The contrast, after the light and air of the reception room, was extreme, and I found myself blinking, my eyes trying to get used to the low light. Small electric tea lights were placed in holders at intervals along the staircase, but the flickering yellow glow they cast merely intensified the darkness around them, and as the boat tilted over a big wave, I had a momentary wash of vertigo. Perhaps it was the staircase disappearing into darkness below us, or perhaps it was the realization that the lightest of touches from Chloe, who was directly behind me, would send me tumbling into Tina and Eva in front. If I broke my neck, there would be no way of knowing that I hadn't simply tripped in the dark. At last, after what seemed like an interminable descent, we stopped in a small lobby. There was the sound of water from a small fountain in a niche in the wall, the kind that trickles endlessly recycled water over a stone globe. The noise should have been soothing, and probably would have been on dry land, but the effect on a boat was somehow different. I began to think about leaks and emergency exits. Were we below the waterline here? There were no windows at all. My chest started to feel tight, and I clenched my fists. Don't panic. Do not, for God's sake, have a panic attack down here. 1, 2, 3. I realized that Eva was speaking and tried to concentrate on her words, not on the low ceiling and cramped, airless space. Perhaps when we got into the treatment rooms and were less crowded, it would be better.
3 treatment rooms down here, Eva was saying, plus the chair upstairs, so I have taken the liberty of selecting therapies that we can run concurrently.
Please, please, please let mine be an upstairs one. My fingernails were digging into my palms.
Ms. West, I have you down for an aromatherapy session in room 1 with Hanny,
Eva said, consulting her list.
Ms. Jensen, you are having a facial in 2 with Klaus. I hope you don't mind a male therapist. Ms. Blacklock, I have booked you a mud wrap in room 3 with Ulla.
I felt my breath quicken. What about Lady Boomer? Chloe said, looking around. Where's she?
She is having a manicure upstairs.
I spoke diffidently.
I don't suppose... Could I have a manicure upstairs, too?
I'm sorry, Eva said, and she did sound sorry.
But there's only 1 chair upstairs. I'd be delighted to book you in for a manicure this afternoon, after your wrap. Or is there another treatment you'd prefer? We can offer Reiki, Swedish massage, Thai massage, reflexology. We also have a flotation tank. If you've never tried one, they're incredibly soothing.
No, I said reflexively. Tina and Chloe turned their heads, and I realized suddenly how loudly I'd spoken, and consciously lowered my voice. No, no, thank you. Flotation's not really my thing. Just the thought of lying down here in a sealed plastic coffin full of water... No problem, Eva said with a smile.
Well, if you're all ready to begin, the treatment rooms are down the corridor. Each has their own ensuite shower. Robes and towels are provided.
I nodded, hardly hearing her instructions. And then, as she turned to go back upstairs, I followed Chloe and Tina down the corridor, hoping that my growing fear didn't show in my face.
I could do this. I could not let my phobias get in the way of doing a good job.
Hi, Rowan. No, I didn't try the spa because it was 2 floors down and had no windows. Sorry.
No, no way. It would be better once we were out of this narrow corridor and in our own treatment rooms. I'd been hoping that the spa treatment time would give me a chance to talk to Tina, Anne, and Chloe, and sound them out about their movements last night. But as Chloe disappeared into her treatment room, the door closing behind her, I realized that wasn't going to be the case. On the other side of the corridor, Tina had stopped at a door marked Treatment Room 1, and I waited for her to enter so I could pass on down the corridor, but she turned back to face me, her hand on the doorknob.
"Darling," she said awkwardly, I may have been a little abrupt when we last spoke."
For a moment I couldn't think what she was talking about, and then it came back, our encounter on the deck, her spitting fury at my questions. Why had she been so touchy about her movements last night?
"What can I say? Hungover, lack of cigs, but that was no excuse for snapping at you."
Her whole bearing and manner screamed a woman more used to demanding apologies than giving them.
"It's fine," I said stiffly. "I completely understand.
I'm not a morning person either. I honestly consider it forgotten. But I felt my face flush with the lie. Tina put her hand out and squeezed my arm, with what I assumed was meant to be a friendly gesture of farewell, but her rings were cold against my skin, and as the door swung shut behind her, I let the shudder I had been repressing roll over me. Then I took a deep breath and tapped at the door of treatment room 3.
"Come in, Miss Blacklock,"
said a voice from inside. The door swung open, and Ulla was standing there smiling, wearing a white spa uniform. I stepped inside the little room, looking around me. It was small, but not as narrow as the corridor, and with only Ulla and myself, it felt considerably less crowded. I felt the tightness in my chest ease slightly. The room was lit with the same flickering electric candles as the stairwell, and there was a raised bed in the center, covered with clear plastic film. A white sheet was folded at the foot.
"Welcome to the spa, Miss Blacklock," Ulla said. "Today you will be experiencing a mud wrap. Have you had one before?"
I shook my head mutely.
"It is very pleasurable and very good for detoxing the skin. The first step, to please remove your clothes and lie upon the bed, covering with the sheet."
"Should I keep my underwear on?" I said, trying to sound as if I went to spas every day.
"No, the mud will stain,"
Ulla said firmly. My face must have expressed my feelings because she bent and took what looked like a piece of crumpled hand towel from a cupboard.
"If you prefer, we provide disposable panties. Some of our guests use them, some do not. It is entirely how you feel comfortable. And now I will leave you to undress. The shower, if you wish it, is through here."
She indicated a door to the left of the bed, and then backed out of the room with a smile, closing the door softly, and I began to strip off my clothes layer by layer, feeling more and more uncomfortable. I piled them on the chair along with my shoes, and then, when I was completely naked, I stepped into the flimsy paper knickers and climbed onto the bed, my bare skin sticking uncomfortably to the plastic, and pulled the white sheet up to my chin. Almost as soon as I'd done so, quickly enough to make me wonder queasily whether there was some kind of camera in the room, there was a soft knock on the door, and I heard Ulla's voice.
"May I come in, Miss Blacklock?"
"Yes," I said croakily, and she entered, holding a bowl of what looked like, and presumably was, warm mud.
"If you would like to lie on your front," Ulla said softly, and I wriggled around.
It was surprisingly difficult, with the sticky film clinging to my skin, and I felt the sheet slip, but Ulla deftly tweaked it back into place. She touched something to the side of the door, and the room was filled with soft whale sounds and the crash of waves. I had the unsettling image again of the weight of water just the other side of the thin metal hull.
"Could you..." I said awkwardly, speaking into the bed. "Is there another track?"
"Of course," Ulla said. She pressed something, and the music changed to Tibetan bells and wind chimes.
"Is that better?"
I nodded, and she said,
"Now,
if you're quite ready." The treatment was surprisingly soothing, once I had forced myself to relax a little. I even got used to the feeling of having a complete stranger massaging mud into my mostly naked body. Halfway through, I realized, with a jolt, that Ulla was speaking to me.
"Sorry,"
I managed sleepily.
"What did you say?" "If you could turn over," she murmured,
and I turned onto my back, the mud slipping and sliding against the plastic. Ulla draped the sheet over my upper body once again and began to massage the front of my legs. She worked her way methodically up my body and at last smoothed the mud over my forehead, cheeks, and closed eyes before speaking again in her low, soothing voice.
"I will wrap you up now, Miss Blacklock, to allow the mud to work, and I will return in about half an hour to help you unwrap and shower. If you need anything, there's a call button to your right."
She pressed my hand to a button set into the side of the bed.
Is everything quite all right?
Quite all right, I said drowsily. The warmth of the room and the soft chimes of the music were extraordinarily soporific. I was finding it hard to remember everything that had happened the night before. Harder to care. I just wanted to sleep. I felt the cling film close around me, and then something heavy and warm on top of that, a towel, I thought. Behind my closed lids, I was aware that the lights of the room had been dimmed.
I will be just outside, she said,
and I heard the soft click of the door. I stopped fighting the tiredness and let the warmth and the darkness close over my head. I dreamt of the girl, drifting miles below us in the cold, sunless depths of the North Sea. I dreamt of her laughing eyes, white and bloated with salt water, of her soft skin, wrinkled and sloughing, of her t-shirt ripped by jagged rocks and disintegrating into rags. Only her long black hair remained, floating through the water like fronds of dark seaweed, tangling in shells and fishing nets, washing up on the shore in hanks like frayed rope where it lay limp, the roar of the crashing waves against the shingle filling my ears. I woke, uneasy and heavy with dread. It took me a while to remember where I was, and still longer to realize that the roar in my ears was not part of the dream, but real. I climbed off the bed, shivering slightly, and wondering how long I'd been lying here. The warm towel had cooled off, and the mud on my skin had dried and cracked. The noise sounded like it was coming from the ensuite shower room. My heart was thumping in my chest as I approached the closed door, but taking my courage in both hands, I turned the bathroom door handle and flung it open. A wave of hot steam engulfed me. I coughed as I fought my way across the misty bathroom to turn off the shower, getting half-drenched in the process. Had Ulla come in and turned it on? But why hadn't she woken me? As the shower trickled and gurgled to a halt, I groped my way back to the door, my dripping hair plastered to my face, and felt for the light. I hit the switch, and light flooded the shower room. And that's when I saw it. Written across the steamy mirror, in letters maybe 6 inches high, were the words, "Stop digging." BBC News, Monday the 28th of September. Missing Briton Laura Blacklock, body found by Danish fishermen. Danish fishermen dredging in the North Sea off the coast of Norway have found the body of a woman. Scotland Yard has been called in to assist the Norwegian police investigation into the discovery of a body dredged up in the early hours of Monday morning by Danish fishermen, lending weight to speculation that the deceased may be missing British journalist Laura Blacklock, 32, who disappeared last week while holidaying in Norway. A spokesperson for Scotland Yard confirmed that they have been called in to help with the investigation, but declined to comment on possible links to Ms. Blacklock's disappearance. Norwegian police said that the body was that of a young Caucasian woman and that the process of confirming the woman's identity was underway. Laura Blacklock's partner, Judah Lewis, when telephoned at his home in North London, refused to comment, except to say that he is devastated by Laura's continued disappearance. Part 5. Chapter 17. For a second, I couldn't do anything. I just stood, staring at the dripping letters, my heart beating until I thought I would be sick. There was a strange roaring in my ears, and I could hear sobbing sounds, like a frightened animal. It was a horrible noise, halfway between terror and pain, and an odd, detached part of myself knew that the person making the sounds was me. Then the room seemed to shift, and the walls leaned in, and I realized I was having a panic attack and was going to pass out unless I got myself somewhere safe. Half crawling, I lurched to the bed where I lay, curled in the fetal position, trying to slow my breathing. I remembered what my CBT coach used to say.
Calm, conscious breathing, low, and progressive relaxation, one muscle at a time. Calm breathing, conscious relaxation, calm and conscious, conscious and calm.
I hated him even then. It barely took the edge off the panic attack even at the time, let alone now when there really was something to panic about.
Calm and conscious.
I heard his light, smug tenor in my head, and somehow the well-remembered fury anchored me, made me strong enough to slow my shallow, panicked breaths, and at last to sit up, dragging my hands through my damp hair and look about me for a phone. Sure enough, there was one on the counter beside an empty pack of spa mud. My hands were shaking and crusted with dried mud so that I could barely pick up the phone, let alone dial zero. But when I did, and I heard a Scandinavian-accented voice say, "Hello, may I help you?" I did not speak. I just sat, my finger poised over the keys. Then I put the phone down with a click. The message was gone. I could see the shower room mirror from where I sat on the bed, and now the shower was turned off and the extractor fan was running, the steam had all but disappeared. All I could see were a couple of runnels of water where the bottom of the two eyes in digging had been, and that was it. Nilsson would never believe me. When I had showered and dressed, I walked back along the corridor. The doors of the other two rooms were open, and I looked in as I passed, but they were quite empty, showing neatly cleared couches ready for the next client. How long had I been asleep? When I made my way up the stairs to the spa reception, it too was empty, apart from Eva, who was sitting at the desk typing something on the laptop. She looked up as I emerged from the concealed door and smiled.
"Ah, Miss Blacklock. Did you enjoy your treatment? Ulla went down to remove the wraps a little while ago, but you were deeply asleep. She was planning to return in 1/4 hour. I hope you weren't disoriented to wake up alone."
"It's fine," I said tightly. "When did Chloe and Tina leave?"
"About 20 minutes ago, I think."
I nodded at the door behind me, now closed again and invisible unless you knew the mirror's secret. "Is this the only entrance to the spa?"
"It depends what you mean by entrance," she said slowly, obviously confused by the question. "It is the only entrance, but it is not the only exit. There is a fire exit downstairs that leads into the staff quarters, but it is, what's the word, single way? It opens outwards only. Also, it is alarmed, so I don't recommend you use it or there will be an evacuation."
"Why do you ask?"
"No reason."
I had made a mistake in blabbing to Nilsson this morning. I wasn't going to make that mistake again.
"They are serving lunch in the Lindgren lounge," Eva said. "But don't worry, you haven't missed anything. It is a buffet lunch, so people are free to come and go."
"Oh, and I almost forgot," she said as I turned to go. "Did Mr. Howard find you?"
"No."
I stopped dead, my hand on the door.
"Why?"
"He came here looking for you. I explained that you were undergoing a treatment, so he could not speak to you personally, but he went downstairs to leave a message with Ulla. Would you like me to try to find it?"
"No,"
I said shortly.
I'll find him myself. Did anyone else go down?
She shook her head.
No, I have been here the whole time.
Miss Blacklock, are you sure nothing is wrong?
I didn't answer. I just turned and left the spa, feeling the chill damp of my skin beneath my clothes, and a cold dread that had spread far deeper. The Lindgren lounge was empty except for Cole, who was sitting at a table with his camera in front of him, and Chloe, who was across from him, staring out of the window and forking salad absent-mindedly into her mouth. She looked up when I came in and nodded at the chair next to her.
Hey, wasn't the spa amazing?
I guess, I said, as I pulled up a chair, and then, realizing how strange and ungracious I must be sounding, I tried again. I mean, yes, it was. My treatment was very good. I'm not good with enclosed spaces. I'm kind of claustrophobic.
Oh,
her face cleared. I wondered why you looked so tense downstairs.
I thought you were hungover.
Well, I gave a false-sounding laugh. That too, probably. Could it have been her, down in the spa? It was definitely possible. But Ben had been so clear about last night, she had never left the room. What about Tina, then? I thought of her wiry strength and her fierce reaction to my question about where she had been last night, and I absolutely could believe she would push someone overboard. Could it have been Ben? He had come down into the spa, and I only had his own word for his alibi last night after all. I wanted to scream. This was sending me mad.
Listen, I said casually to Chloe. You were playing poker last night, weren't you?
I wasn't playing, but I was there, yes. Poor Lars got fleeced. But then he can afford it. She gave a short, rather heartless laugh, and Cole looked up from the other table and flashed her a grin.
This is going to sound like an odd question, but did any of the others leave the cabin?
I couldn't honestly say, Chloe said. I went through to the bedroom after a while. Poker's the most boring game to watch. Cole was there for a bit, weren't you, Cole?
Only for about half an hour, Cole said. Like Chloe says, poker's not really a spectator sport. I do remember Howard leaving. He went to get his wallet.
My mouth was suddenly dry as he continued.
Why do you want to know?
Doesn't matter. I tried to force a smile and changed the subject before he could pin me down for an answer. How are the photos?
Take a look if you like,
he said, tossing the camera across with such casualness that I gasped and nearly dropped it.
Press the play button on the back and you can scroll through them. I'll send you a print of any you like.
I began to work my way through the pictures, going back in time through the voyage, past moody shots of clouds and wheeling gulls, past the poker game last night, pictures of Bulmer laughing and scooping Ben's chips towards him, and Lars groaning as he laid down a pair of twos to Ben's three fives. One, from last night, almost took my breath away. It was a photo of Chloe taken from very close. Her eyes had just flicked towards the camera. You could see the tiny hairs on her cheek, golden in the lamplight, and the smile that tugged at the corner of her mouth. And there was something so intimate and so tender about the shot that I felt like an intruder even looking at it. My gaze went to Chloe almost inadvertently, wondering about her and Cole, and she looked up.
What is it? Found one of me?
I shook my head and hastily flicked on to the next picture before she had time to look over my shoulder at the little screen. The next one was of myself, the shot that Cole had taken last night that had caught me unawares and caused me to spill my coffee. He had snapped me as I flung my head up in alarm, and the look in my eyes made me flinch. I pressed the button to continue. The others were just more of the ship, one of Tina on deck, looking piercingly at the camera, her eyes like a raptor, one of Ben carrying an oversized rucksack up the gangway.
I was reminded again of Cole's enormous trunk. What was in it?
Photographic equipment, he'd said, but all I'd seen him use so far was this one point and click. And then I was past the pictures of the ship and into some society party. I was about to hand the camera back when my heart seemed to stutter in my chest and I froze. The screen was displaying a picture of a man eating a canapé.
"Who's he?" Chloe said over my shoulder. And then, "Wait, issn't that Alexander Bellhomme in the background, talking to Archer?"
It was. But it wasn't Alexander or Archer I was looking at. It was the waitress holding the tray of canapés. She had her face turned half away from the camera, and her dark hair was falling out of its clip across her cheek. But I was almost certain, almost completely certain, that she was the woman in Cabin 10.
Chapter 18. I handed the camera back carefully, my hands shaking, wondering whether to say anything. This was proof. Irrefutable proof that Cole, Archer, and Alexander had been in the same room as the woman I'd seen. Should I ask Cole if he knew her? I sat in an agony of indecision as he switched off his camera and began packing it away. Fuck. Fuck. Should I say something? I had no idea what to do. It was possible Cole didn't realize the significance of the picture he'd taken. The girl was half out of shot, the focus was on some other person completely, a man I'd never met. If Cole had something to hide, I'd be incredibly foolish to flag up what I'd just seen. He'd deny it and then he'd probably delete the picture. On the other hand, it was very likely he had no idea who the girl was and might be willing to let me have the image. But if I raised the issue now, in front of Chloe, and with who knew who else possibly listening, I thought of the way Björn had appeared from behind the panelling at breakfast, and involuntarily looked over my shoulder. The last thing I wanted was for this picture to go the way of the mascara. I wasn't going to make the same mistake twice. If I did decide to confront Cole, I should do it in private. The photo had been safe on Cole's camera up until now. It would be safe a little longer. I stood up, my knees suddenly shaky.
I'm actually not very hungry, I said to Chloe. And I'm supposed to be meeting Ben Howard.
Oh, I forgot, she said casually. He was in here looking for you. I met him coming up out of the spa. He said he had something important to tell you.
Did he say where he was going?
Back to his cabin to do some work, I think.
Thanks.
Björn appeared again like a genie from behind the concealed screen.
May I get you a drink, Miss Blacklock?
I shook my head.
No, I've remembered I'm supposed to be meeting someone. Could you please send a sandwich to my suite?
Certainly. He nodded, and I slipped out of the room with an apologetic nod to Cole and Chloe. I was hurrying along the corridor that led towards the aft cabins when I rounded a corner and ran into Ben, literally. We collided with a crash that knocked the breath out of me.
"Lo!"
he grabbed my arm.
"I've been looking for you everywhere."
"I know. What were you doing down in the spa?"
"Didn't you just hear me? Looking for you."
I stared at him, at his face, the picture of innocence, his eyes above his dark beard, round and full of urgency. Could I trust him? I had absolutely no idea. A few years ago, I would have said I knew Ben inside out, right up until the moment he walked out. Now, I had learned that I couldn't even totally trust myself, let alone another person.
"Did you come into my treatment room?" I asked abruptly.
"What?"
He looked momentarily confused.
"No, of course not. They said you were getting a mud wrap. I didn't think you'd want me barging in. I was told to look for some girl called Ulla, but she wasn't there, so I pushed a note under your door and came back up."
"I didn't see any note."
Well, I left one.
What's this about?
Something in my chest felt like bursting, a mixture of fear and frustration. How could I possibly know if Ben was telling the truth? The note would be a stupid thing to lie about anyway, even if he'd written the message in the steam. Why fib about leaving a note? Perhaps it had been there, and I'd just overlooked it in my panic. Someone else left me a message, I said at last, written in steam on the mirror of the shower next door while I was having the treatment. It said, "Stop digging."
What?
His pink face went slack with shock, his mouth hanging open. If he was acting, it was the best performance I'd ever seen him give.
Are you serious?
100%.
But didn't you see them go in? Is there another entrance to the bathroom?
No, they must have come through the room. I felt oddly ashamed saying it, but I put my chin up, refusing to be apologetic. I fell asleep. There's only one entrance to the spa, and Eva says no one went down except for Tina and Chloe. And you.
And the spa staff?
Ben reminded me.
Plus, surely there must be a fire exit down there.
There's an exit, but it's one way. It leads into the staff quarters, but you can't open it from the other side, I asked.
Ben looked unconvinced.
Not that hard for someone to wedge it open, though, right?
No, but it's alarmed. There would have been sirens going off all over the place.
Well, I guess it's possible if you knew enough about the system, you could fiddle with the alarm settings. But Eva wasn't there the whole time, you know.
What do you mean?
She wasn't there when I came back up. And Bulma was. She was waiting for her nail varnish to dry. But Eva was gone. So if she says she was there for the whole time, she's not telling the truth.
Oh, God. I thought about myself lying there, half naked beneath the thin film wraps and towels, and how someone, anyone, could have come in and placed a hand over my mouth, wound a sheet of plastic around my head.
So what did you want to see me about?
I said, trying to sound normal. Ben looked uneasy.
Oh, that. Well, you know we were on a tour of the bridge and so on.
I nodded. Archer was trying to text someone, I think, and he dropped his phone. I picked it up, and it was open on the contacts page.
And?
The name just said Jess, but the picture was a girl a lot like the one you described. Late 20s, long dark hair, dark eyes. And this is the thing. She was wearing a Pink Floyd t-shirt.
Something cold trickled down my spine. I remembered Archer last night, his laughing face as he twisted my arm up behind my back. Chloe's disapproving, maybe the rumours about his first wife are true.
Was she the person he was trying to text?
I asked. Ben shook his head.
I don't know. He might have pressed a few buttons when he fumbled the phone.
Automatically, I pulled out my own phone, ready to Google Jess Archer Fenlon, but the search bar whirred fruitlessly. The internet was still down, and my emails were still not loading.
Is your internet working?
I asked Ben. He shook his head.
No, there's some issue with the router, apparently. I suppose teething problems are par for the course with maiden voyages, but it's a right pain.
Archer was sounding off about it over lunch. He kicked up quite a stink to poor Hanny. I thought she was about to burst into tears at one point.
Anyway, she went and spoke to Camilla What's-Her-Face, and it'll be fixed shortly, apparently. At least, I bloody hope it will. I've got a piece to file.
I frowned as I pushed the phone back in my pocket. Could Archer have been the person who wrote the message in the steam? I thought of his strength, the hint of cruelty in his smile last night, and I felt sick at the idea of him tiptoeing past me while I slept.
We went down to the engine room, Ben said, almost as if reading my thoughts. It's three decks down. We probably passed fairly close to that exit from the spa you were talking about.
Would you have noticed if someone had peeled off from the group? I asked. Ben shook his head.
I doubt it. The engine deck was very cramped. We were all kind of strung out, slotting in and out of small spaces. The group only got back together when we got upstairs.
I felt suddenly and nauseously claustrophobic, as if the stifling opulence of the boat was closing around me.
I've got to get out, I said. Anywhere. Lo?
Ben put a hand out towards my shoulder, but I pulled myself away from his grasping fingers and staggered towards the deck door, forcing it open against the wind. The wind hit me in the face like a punch, and I stumbled to the rail, hanging over it, feeling the pitch of the boat. The dark grey waves stretched out like a desert, mile upon mile, stretching to the horizon, no sign of land of any kind, nor even a ship. I shut my eyes, seeing the fruitless whirling of the internet search icon. There was literally no way of calling for help.
Are you all right?
I heard over my shoulder. The words snatched by the wind. Ben had followed me. I screwed my eyes shut against the salt spray that smacked the side of the ship and shook my head.
Lo, don't touch me, I said through gritted teeth.
And then the boat went up and over a particularly big wave, and I felt my stomach clench, and I threw up over the rail, my stomach heaving and heaving until my eyes watered and there was nothing left but acid. I saw, with a kind of vicious pleasure, that my vomit was spattered across the hull and porthole below. Paintwork not so perfect now, I thought as I wiped my mouth with my sleeve.
Are you okay?
Ben said again from behind me, and I clenched my fists on the rail. Be nice, Lo. I turned round and forced myself to nod.
I actually feel a bit better. I've never been a great sailor.
Oh, Lo.
He put an arm around me and squeezed, and I let myself be pulled into his hug, suppressing the urge to pull away. I needed Ben on side. I needed him to trust me, to think I trusted him. A whiff of cigarette smoke caught my nostrils, and I heard the tap-tap of high heels coming along the deck.
Oh, God.
I stood up straighter, moving away from Ben almost as if it were accidental.
It's Tina. Can we go in? I can't face her at the moment.
Not now. Not with tears drying on my cheeks and vomit on my sleeve. It was hardly the professional, ambitious image I was trying to project.
Sure,
Ben said solicitously, and he held open the door as we hurried inside, just as Tina rounded the corner. After the roar of the wind, the corridor was suddenly quiet and stiflingly hot. We watched in silence as Tina strolled to the rail and leaned over, just a few paces upwind of where I had vomited moments before.
If you want to know the truth, Ben said, looking out through the glass at Tina's back, my money would be on her. She's a stone-cold bitch.
I looked at him in shock. Ben had sometimes been hostile about the women he worked with, but I'd never heard such naked dislike in his voice.
Excuse me?
Because she's an ambitious woman?
Not just that.
You haven't worked with her. I have.
I've met a few careerists in my time, but she's in another league. I swear she'd kill for a story or a promotion, and it's women she seems to pick on. I can't stand women like that. They're their own worst enemy.
I kept silent. There was something close to misogyny in his words and tone, but at the same time it was so uncomfortably close to what Rowan had said that I wasn't sure if I could dismiss it as just that. Tina had been downstairs in the spa with me when the message appeared, and then there was her defensiveness earlier this morning.
I asked her where she was last night, I said, reluctantly. She was really odd, very aggressive. She said I shouldn't go about making enemies.
Oh, that,
Ben said. He smiled, but it wasn't a pleasant smile. There was something rather unkind about it.
You won't get her to admit it, but I happen to know she was with Joseph.
Joseph? As in cabin attendant Joseph? Are you kidding me?
Nope. I got it from Alexander during the tour. He saw Joseph tiptoeing out of Tina's cabin in the early hours in a state of, let's just say, déshabillé. Blimey. Blimey indeed.
Who'd have thought Joseph's devotion to passenger comfort would extend so far?
He's not really my type, but I wonder if I could persuade Ulla to do the same. I didn't laugh. Not with the narrow, sunless rooms just a couple of decks beneath where we were standing right now. How far might someone go to escape their confines?
But then Tina turned from where she was smoking at the rail and caught sight of me and Ben inside the boat. She flicked her cigarette over the rail and gave me a little wink before making her way back along the deck, and I felt suddenly vile at the thought of all the men chuckling about her little adventure behind her back.
"What about Alexander, then, if it comes to that?" I said accusingly. "His cabin's aft along with ours. And what was he doing spying on Tina in the middle of the night?"
Ben snorted.
"Are you kidding me? He must be 25 stone. I can't see him lifting an adult woman over a rail."
"He wasn't playing poker, so we've no idea where he was, apart from the fact that he was prowling around in the early hours of the morning." I remembered, too, with a sudden chill, that he had been in the photo on Cole's camera.
He's the size of a walrus. Plus, he's got a heart condition. Have you ever seen him take the stairs? Or more to the point, heard him? He sounds like a steam train, and you start to worry when he gets to the top that he'll cark it and fall back on you. I can't imagine him overcoming anyone in a struggle.
She could have been very drunk or drugged. I bet anyone could tip an unconscious woman overboard. It would just be a matter of leverage.
If she was unconscious, then what about the scream?
Ben said, and I felt a sudden pulse of fury run through me.
God, do you know what? I'm so fed up of everyone picking and questioning me as if I should have the answers to all this. I don't know, Ben. I don't know what to think anymore. All right?
All right, he said mildly. I'm sorry. I didn't mean it like that. I was just thinking aloud. Alexander. Taking my name in vain?
Came a voice from up the corridor, and we both swung around. I felt my cheeks go scarlet. How long had Alexander been there? Had he heard my speculations?
Oh, hello, Bellarm,
Ben said smoothly. He didn't seem at all put out.
We were just talking about you.
So I heard.
Alexander drew level with us, panting slightly. Ben was right, I realized. The smallest exertion set him gasping breathlessly.
All good, I hope.
Of course, Ben said. We were just discussing dinner tonight. Lo was saying how knowledgeable you were about food.
For a minute, I couldn't think of anything to say, stunned by how good a liar Ben had become since we were together. Or had he always been such a slick deceiver, and I'd just never noticed? Then I realized both Ben and Alexander were waiting for me to speak, and I stammered.
Oh, yes, remember, Alexander? You were telling me about Fugu.
Of course. Such a thrill. I do think it's one's responsibility to wring every ounce of sensation out of life, don't you? Otherwise, it's just a short, nasty and brutal interlude until death.
He gave a broad, slightly crocodile-like smile and hoisted something beneath his arm. It was a book, a volume of Patricia Highsmith, I saw.
Where are you off to? Ben asked casually. We've got a few free hours until dinner now, I think.
Don't tell anyone, Alexander said confidentially. But this colour isn't entirely natural.
He touched his, now he mentioned it, rather walnut-coloured cheek.
So I'm off to the spa for a little touch-up. My wife always says I look better with a bit of colour.
I didn't know you were married, I said, hoping my surprise wasn't too evident in my voice. Alexander nodded.
For my sins? 38 years this year. You get less for murder, I'm led to believe.
He gave a slightly grating laugh, and I cringed inwardly. If he hadn't heard what we were saying earlier, it was an odd remark. If he had heard, then it was in very poor taste indeed. Have a nice time in the spa, I said lamely. He smiled again.
I will. See you at dinner.
He was turning to go when, suddenly compelled by an impetus I couldn't quite dissect, I said, Wait, Alexander. He turned, one eyebrow raised. I felt my courage falter, but I carried on. This is going to sound a little strange, but I heard some noises last night, coming from cabin 10, the one at the end of the ship. It's supposed to be empty, but there was a woman in it yesterday, only now we can't track her down. Did you see or hear anything last night? A splash? Any other noise? Ben said you were up.
I was indeed up, Alexander said dryly. I have trouble sleeping. You do, you know, when you get to my age, and a new bed always makes the matter worse. So I slipped up on deck for a little midnight walkies, and on my way there and back I saw quite a few comings and goings. Our dear friend Tina had a little visit from our very attentive cabin crew, and that dishy Mr. Lederer was prowling round here at one stage. I don't know what he was doing out of bounds. His cabin is at quite the other end of the ship. I did wonder if he might have been coming to see you.
He cocked an eyebrow at me, and I blushed furiously. No, definitely not. Could he have been going into cabin 10?
I didn't see, Alexander said regretfully. I just caught a glimpse of him rounding the corner. On his way back to his cabin to establish an alibi for his crimes, perhaps. What time was it? Ben asked.
Alexander pursed his lips.
It must have been around 4 or 4:30, I think.
I exchanged a glance with Ben. I had been woken up at 3:04, so the sighting of Yosef at 4 a.m. probably ruled out Tina. Presumably he had been in her cabin all night. But Cole, what reason could he possibly have for being down this end of the ship? I thought again of his huge case of equipment being bumped up the gangway.
And who was the woman I saw coming out of your cabin?
Alexander said rather slyly, looking at Ben. Ben blinked.
Sorry? Are you sure you have the right cabin? Number 8? Isn't that right?
That's mine, Ben said with an uneasy laugh.
But I can assure you no one was in my cabin apart from me. Is that so?
Alexander raised his eyebrow again and then chuckled.
Well, if you say so. It was dark. Perhaps I mistook the cabin.
He hoisted his book under his arm again.
Well, if you have no further questions, my dears?
No, I said, slightly reluctantly. At least, not now. May I come and find you if I think of anything else?
Of course. In that case, adieu until dinner, when I shall emerge bronzed as a young Adonis and basted as a Christmas turkey. Toodle-pip.
He puffed away up the corridor. Ben and I watched as he rounded the corner.
He's a full package, isn't he?
Ben said when he disappeared. He's just so full on. Do you think that character is all an act? Or is he really like that, 24/7?
I have no idea. I suspect it started out as a bit of a pose, but it's become second nature now.
And his wife, have you ever met her?
No, but apparently she really exists. She's supposedly something of a dragon, daughter of a German count,
and apparently quite the beauty in her day. They've got this incredible house in South Kensington full of original artworks. A Rubens and a Titian or two. Utterly unbelievable stuff. It was featured in Hello a while back, and there were all these rumours that they were actually looted Nazi stuff, and they got a tap on the shoulder from the IFAR. But I think that's bollocks.
I can't work out whether he said anything useful.
I rubbed my hands over my face, trying to scrub away the weariness that was starting to settle over me like a black cloud.
That stuff about coal, that was weird, right?
Yes, I guess. But if it was around Ford, does that really help? And to be honest, I'm starting to think that he's maybe just making stuff up for effect. That thing about me having a girl in my cabin was pure bollocks. You do believe that, right?
I felt a lump rise in my throat. I was so tired. I was so tired. But I couldn't rest.
Jesus, so much for this trip being the making of my career. If I carried on making trouble like this, I could end up with an address book full of enemies, not contacts.
Yes, of course, I managed.
Ben looked at me, as if trying to gauge whether I was telling the truth.
Good,
he said at last.
Because I swear there was no one in my cabin. Unless someone got in while I was out, of course.
Do you think he heard us? I asked,
more to change the subject than because I wanted to know.
Before, I mean. The way he came round that corner, you wouldn't think someone so big could creep up on you like that.
Ben shrugged.
I doubt it. I don't think he's the type to hold a grudge, anyway.
I said nothing, but inwardly I wasn't sure I agreed.
Alexander struck me as exactly the type to hold a grudge, and enjoy holding it, too.
What do you want to do now? Ben asked.
Want me to come with you to find Bulma?
I shook my head. I needed to go back to my cabin, get some food inside me. And besides, I wasn't at all sure I wanted Ben to come with me to see Lord Bulmer.
Chapter 19. The door to my cabin was locked, but inside an open sandwich was resting on a tray on the dressing table alongside a bottle of mineral water. It had been there some time, judging by the runnels of condensation on the side. I wasn't hungry, but I'd had nothing since breakfast, and most of that I'd thrown up, so I sat and forced myself to eat. It was prawn and hard-boiled egg on heavy rye bread, and as I chewed, I watched the sea rise and fall outside the window, its ceaseless movement echoing the restless thoughts that were running around inside my head. Cole, Alexander, and Archer had actually been in the same room as that girl. I was almost sure of it. Her face had been turned away from the camera, and it was hard for me to remember the brief flash of features I'd seen through the open cabin door yesterday, but the jolt of recognition I had felt when I saw the picture had been like an electric shock. I had to hang on to that certainty. Archer, at least, had an alibi. But I was beginning to realise that it was one that rested entirely on Ben's evidence, and he had his own reasons for wanting that room to be secure, and no matter how you spun it, he had deliberately lied to me. If it hadn't been for Cole's chance remark, I would never have known that Ben himself had left the cabin.
But Ben? Ben? Surely not.
If I could trust anyone on board this boat, it had to be him, right?
I wasn't sure anymore. I swallowed the final crust of bread, wiped my fingers on the napkin, and stood, feeling the rock and sway of the boat beneath me. While I'd eaten, a sea mist had crept in, and the room had become darker, so I switched on the light before checking my phone. There was nothing there. I refreshed, hoping without hope for an email from someone, anyone. I didn't dare think about Judah, about what his silence meant. When the connection failed notification came up, I felt a shift in my stomach that was mingled fear and relief. Relief because it meant that perhaps, just perhaps, Judah had been trying to contact me, that his silence didn't mean what I feared it might.